B. Collins.
Peter B. Collins, news and comment. It's Wednesday, January 25th, 2017. Spread the word, will you? This Friday, I'm going to test out Facebook Live. I'm going to deliver this news and comment podcast live on Facebook at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern. And to make it all work, I'm relying on you to help share it on Facebook and spread the word. And as a starter, if you're not already a friend of mine on Facebook, can we fix that? I want you to make a friend request to Peter B. Collins, not my fan page, Peter B. Collins Show. Turns out you cannot originate live on a fan page. It's got to be on a personal page, so that's where the action will be. And any friend request I get, I will accept. I have been a little bit pickier in the past, but in order to facilitate the Facebook Live feed, I'm going to accept any friend request I get. And when we go live on Friday, if you're able to connect up particularly early in the event, it's really important that you share it far and wide. That's how you build the feed into a broadcast. And I'm still figuring all this out. I think it's going to work. But we will see when we launch it on Friday afternoon. So today was a dark day. A blitz from the Trump White House, embracing the dark side that Dick Cheney infamously talked about after 9/11. And in a flurry of radical orders, Trump indicated that he is moving to lift the ban on CIA black sites. He will bring new prisoners to Guantanamo Bay, and not just those connected to the original authorization for use of military force after 9/11. He has expanded the net to include members of the Islamic State. And the order that will allow black sites to be reinstated is something that is highly controversial. All of this is pandering to his base, the bloodthirsty people who think that you can simply vanquish opponents by killing a bunch of them and torturing a few others, to set an example. And Trump has dismissed the informed commentary that torture doesn't work by saying that he doesn't believe that, and that even if it doesn't work, these people deserve it. Now, we're talking about suspects. We're talking about people who've been arrested, detained. And to jump to a conclusion that they're guilty and therefore you can punish them in advance of any process is distinctly un-American, unconstitutional, and it violates our treaty obligations with other countries. Now, it's a draft order. It doesn't immediately direct the reopening of CIA prisons or the revival of torture tactics, which are now banned by a law, but it sets up a high-level policy review to make further recommendations to Trump, who vowed during the campaign to bring back waterboarding and a hell of a lot worse. And here's the quote. Not only because, quote, torture works, but because even if it doesn't work, they deserve it anyway. This is distressing and disgusting. And it will further damage the reputation of the United States. It will invite other people, most notably the Islamic State, to behead Americans after they put them in orange jumpsuits and reference Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And Trump's oblivious to all that because he's on a power trip. He believes, as a would-be dictator, that he can create sufficient fear that our enemies will just crawl under a rock. And we have to acknowledge the role of Barack Obama here. When he essentially obstructed justice by directing his cabinet officers not to pursue any investigations or prosecutions for war crimes related to torture and the related issues. When he actively worked to block Dianne Feinstein from releasing the Senate Intelligence Committee's investigation into torture. He set the tone that creates the opening for Trump to do this today. And I know this is hypothetical, but if Obama had simply prosecuted Don Rumsfeld or Dick Cheney, just one person, for authorizing torture during the Bush era, we wouldn't be seeing this discussion today. We wouldn't see these, Trump signatures affixed to these dramatic executive orders. He'd be saying, wow, I don't want to be the next Dick Cheney locked up at Leavenworth for approving torture. But without that example, without any consequences for what happened, this is a Groundhog Day that will be repeated. So what we see here is a lot more form than substance. Because, for example, one of the things in order to achieve Trump's goal of restoring torture, including waterboarding, is that you have to modify the Army Field Manual. And as it is presently written and the law, the state of the law and precedence, it would take at least 2 years to amend the Army Field Manual. And so while Trump is acting like a dictator and issuing these orders and doing it in such a manner that many people believe that these things are going to go into effect immediately, that's not really the case. And like so many things, Trump really does enjoy the theater of all this. And it's pretty clear that he doesn't follow the details that closely. So let's hear from some critics. Steve Kleinman, a retired Air Force colonel and chairman of the Research Advisory Committee to the High Value Detainee Interrogation Group, warned that weakening U.S. prohibitions on torture carried significant consequences. Quote, if the U.S. was to make it once again the policy of the country to coerce and to detain at length in extrajudicial fashion, the costs would be beyond substantial. They'd be potentially existential. We've seen how torture promotes violent extremism, how it degrades alliances. We've seen how it only serves to provide information that policymakers want to support, not what they need. And what he didn't say is that when people are tortured, they will say whatever they think their interrogators want to hear. They'll make things up. And to his credit, John McCain, who opposed torture until he ran for president in 2008, went silent on it. Then opposed torture again. He's back at it. He said the president can sign whatever executive orders he likes, but the law is the law. We are not bringing back torture in the United States of America. McCain referenced explicit guarantees from the new CIA director, Mike Pompeo, and Defense Secretary James Mattis during their confirmation proceedings. And he said, I am confident these leaders will be true to their word. Well, I'm not, Senator McCain. Because they offered weasel words. Pompeo, in particular, said that he couldn't imagine Trump ordering him to do it. He didn't say he would not take the order. Well, let me rephrase that. I guess he did once, but in his written comments, he added a lot of caveats. So here it is. Mike Pompeo said in Senate testimony last week he would absolutely not comply with an order from the White House to use interrogation techniques outside the Army Field Manual. But in subsequent questioning by the Intelligence Committee, Pompeo said he would consult with experts at the agency and other organizations in the U.S. government on whether the Army Field Manual is an impediment to gathering vital intelligence to provide the country, to protect the country, or whether any rewrite of the Army Field Manual is needed. And let's turn to another voice here, Tom Malinowski. He was with Human Rights Watch, and then Obama made him Assistant Secretary of State for Human Rights. And he said the draft order showed that everyone who thought the office of the presidency or the advice of cabinet secretaries like General Mattis or others is being shown wrong again. He'll listen to his worst instincts over his best advisors unless restrained by law. And I think that's accurate. Meanwhile, Trump has tweeted that he is tasking Jeff Sessions, who is not yet confirmed as Attorney General, to set up a commission to investigate the allegations that live primarily in Trump's mind of widespread non-citizen voter fraud that gave Hillary Clinton the edge in the popular vote in November of 2016. Now, this is a bad joke on many levels. The president is embracing conspiracy theories, And I relish being able to blame other people for getting involved in conspiracy theories, because that's a weapon that's been brandished at me. And Dan Pfeiffer, used to work in the Obama White House, said these allegations are basically a false flag so Republicans can engage in even more voter suppression. And yesterday I told you that Trump's own lawyers filing against Jill Stein's recount in Michigan said all available evidence suggests that the 2016 general election was not tainted by fraud or mistake. Now, you know, I don't believe that. There was election fraud, widespread voter fraud, millions voting for Hillary illegally in California. That's bullshit. But election fraud, like preventing people from voting, like the potential that the scanners in Detroit were aligned not to read a vote for Hillary and to read a vote for Trump. That's highly likely based on the Jill Stein recount that was stopped by Republican judges at the behest of the Trump campaign. And so I don't fear this. I was listening to Rush Limbaugh for a few minutes, and he's chuckling and chortling and saying, gosh, you know, Trump is really giving it to Debbie Blabbermouth Schultz. That's what he called her. And that this is scaring the Democrats because their fraud is going to be exposed. Well, I think Schultz engaged in some fraud, but it was to help Hillary beat Bernie Sanders. But that won't be investigated by Jeff Sessions and his buddies. And maybe you've heard that Steve Bannon, the alt-right genius who is a counselor to the president, and he has finally broken down and started wearing ties, Steve Bannon is registered to vote today in two states, in New York and in Florida. Now, New York is not a part of the cross-check system that was exposed by Greg Palast, but Florida is. And Steve Bannon, by the way, it's not illegal to be registered in more than one place. It is illegal to vote in more than one place. But Trump claims that there are a lot of dead people on the voter rolls and that people can game that, and that there are a lot of non-citizens who vote. And anybody who is rational is pretty clear that there is simply no evidence to support Trump's obsession. And even John Husted, who is the tainted Republican Secretary of State in Ohio, who was slapped down by a court for purging voters and forced to reinstate them just before the general election in November. Well, he tweeted back at Trump, and all this is going on at four in the morning. What are these people? Now, maybe Twitter's clock is set with Pacific time in San Francisco, where it's headquartered. I don't know. In fact, if you tweet on the East Coast, would you help me out here and just drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com, and let me know if when you see a Twitter post, it reflects the time zone that you're in? Because I can't believe all these people are up and tweeting at 4 in the morning. Trump's tweets came out at 4:10 and 4:13. At any rate, John Husted tweets, "We conducted a review 4 years ago in Ohio and already have a statewide review of 2016 election underway. Easy to vote, hard to cheat." And you know, Republican leaders just squirm when they're asked if they agree with Trump. Some shrug. I guess Tim Scott, the Republican senator from South Carolina, he just shrugged. Didn't want to answer the question. All right, today is also the day that Trump renewed his threat, his pledge, to build the wall along our southern border with Mexico. And, of course, it is still policy-free. He doesn't say who's going to build the wall, how much it's going to cost, where that money's going to come from. He just says he wants to get started right now. And that Mexico will eventually pay for it. You better believe it, he says. But when you actually drill down and look at who might benefit from this, and where the construction workers will come from who would build this wall, it would most likely be cheaper Mexican labor and Mexican construction companies. Because we don't have the supplies and the infrastructure along our southern border. Richard Steer, who is a construction consultant with Gleeds Worldwide, said that building a wall of even 1,000 miles, and the border is 1,889 miles long, would cost at least $31 billion, take 40,000 people, and more than 5 years to construct. He said in addition to $4 billion in concrete, $6 billion in steel, that another $2 billion would be spent on clearing land and building access roads. Some of the land is private, and eminent domain would be required to take control of it. And so this is not something that can be done quickly. And yet the fantasy of Mr. Reality Television is that he can snap his fingers as soon as he gets out of the tanning booth, and that wall is just going to be built. Now, next week, the president of Mexico, Enrique Peña Nieto, will be at the White House visiting with Trump. And will Trump bring up his demand that Mexico pay for the wall? He didn't bring it up when he went to see Peña Nieto in Mexico City last year, when he was just acting presidential. And we know that the predecessor there in Mexico has said, we're not going to pay for the fucking wall. So, this is going to be a long process. And Trump is going to find out that his idea of quick is not how government operates. One of the other issues that Trump has made moves on is orders to the Immigration Service to sharply limit and to heavily vet people coming from Muslim-majority countries and those in the war zone that the U.S. has torn up in the Middle East. The refugee policy that's under consideration would halt admissions from Syria and suspend it from other majority Muslim nations until the administration can study how to properly vet them, and they might just drag that out for years. And the plan is in line with the ban on Muslim immigrants that Trump blabbed about during his campaign. Oh, and one other thought about the wall. Why don't they get Israel to build it? Israel has built this ugly barrier with the Palestinians. They've got experience at this. They might be able to bring it in at a pretty low cost, too. Now, one of the problems that Trump faces is that General Kelly, who's been appointed the Director of Homeland Security, John Kelly, he doesn't think the wall is going to make much of a difference. He said a physical barrier will not do the job. He said a wall would be effective only to the extent that it's backed up by far more sweeping measures. It has to be a layered defense, Kelly said. If you build a wall, you would still have to back that up with patrolling by human beings, by sensors, by observation devices. He said, I believe the defense of the southwest border starts 1,500 miles south, and that is partnering with great countries as far south as Peru, who are very cooperative with us in terms of getting after the drug production transport. Kelly called for a more balanced approach to protecting the border, saying security cannot be attempted as an endless series of goal line stands on the one-foot line at the official ports of entry or along the thousands of miles of border between the U.S. and Mexico. So at this point, one of the things that I've toyed with is the idea of setting up a pool to predict which Trump appointees will bail out of the cabinet first. I think that John Kelly is a candidate for early exit from the Trump administration, and we shall see. I want to recommend a piece at BuzzFeed by Adolfo Flores, where he gives us a reality check on the idea of building a wall, the problems that you can't build a wall that crosses the rivers, the Rio Grande and others, and that, as we pointed out, the cost is unknown. It could balloon up past $40 billion if it really is a wall and it really runs more than 1,000 miles. And then there is this issue of how we're going to squeeze the money out of Mexico. And Trump, who purports to be this great deft negotiator, one of the strategies that he has used is called the cram down. That is a bankruptcy tool where you basically just force your creditors to accept what you're offering on a take-it-or-leave-it basis. And Trump kind of fantasizes that he can leverage the payments that Mexican citizens send home from the United States. It's billions of dollars every year. But just grabbing the money would be unconstitutional. Maybe that won't prevent him. But There really are problems with virtually every line of fantasy that Trump has promoted in this regard. Well, one of the first things Trump did was to impose the gag order banning U.S. taxpayer dollars from being used to counsel abortions outside the United States. And that's a ping-pong issue that changes with the every Republican or Democratic administration. But they seem to think the gag order is a good idea, and so there has been an announced gag at the EPA, the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of the Interior, and the Department of Agriculture. And memos have been written telling employees that they should engage in no new projects or contracts, and to make no public statements, no new posts on websites or blogs, no news releases. And we're told this is temporary, and it's just a part of the natural transition between administrations. But I predict that some of these agencies will never see the end of the gag orders that are being imposed now. And I think that the transition is being used as cover for that. Trump is threatening that by next week he will name his nominee to fill the seat on the Supreme Court that the Republicans scurriously prevented Barack Obama from filling. And the three finalists have been announced. They're all young, in their 50s or younger. They're all hard-right extremists. Thomas Hardiman of Pennsylvania, sitting on the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, appointed by Bush in 2007. Neil Gorsuch, appointed by Bush in 2006 in Denver on the Tenth Circuit. And Bill Pryor, aged 54, sits on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. And he is the one that Roger Shuler of LegalSchnauzer.blogspot.com has revealed to be a closeted gay man. And he, like many in that position, takes a very hard line opposed to rights for homosexuals, including marriage equality. He is an extremist, anti-abortion advocate. And those gay porn pictures that he published in a gay magazine called Bad Puppy back in the 90s are very likely to surface if Bill Pryor is named to the Supreme Court. And that would be a big favor to Jeff Sessions. The two are very close. And Shuler has reported that Jeff Sessions is also a closeted gay man and has that in common, theoretically, with Bill Pryor. Every day I like to pause for a second and thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. And right over here I keep a list of recent transactions at PayPal. For example, Andrew Harnack, Susan Lundgren, Faith Peoples, I may have mentioned them yesterday, George Reeves, and William Cote, or Cote. William Cote just renewed an annual subscription. Thank you, sir. So, you get the idea. People support my work voluntarily. And I'd like you to step up and replace some of the people who have peeled off for whatever reasons and no longer send me $5 or $10 a month. All you got to do is go to peterbcollins.com. You click on the menu button, pull it down, click on Become a Subscriber. That takes you to the sign-up page. We have bonus books displayed there. And if you take out a new annual subscription and give me a mailing address in the continental U.S., you can have your choice of those bonus books. Act now. Another tweet that came from Trump appears to have been triggered by the new president's viewing of Bill O'Reilly's show on the Fox News Channel. Because last night, O'Reilly focused on violence and death in Chicago. It is a serious problem. And at about 9:30 Eastern time, in the middle of the O'Reilly broadcast, a tweet came out from Trump. If Chicago doesn't fix the horrible carnage going on, 228 shootings in 2017 with 42 killings, up 24% from 2016, I will send in the feds. Now, it's notable that Trump misstated the facts, and I don't want to be such a quibbler that I say that that doesn't mean that people are dying needlessly on the streets of Chicago. But the true figures are lower than he said, and he does have a penchant for exaggeration. To be fair, O'Reilly reported those exaggerated numbers, and so did the Chicago Tribune. At any rate, sending in the feds, what does that mean? Is he going to declare martial law in Chicago and deploy the National Guard or other military units? Is he going to take control of the Chicago Police Department? Is he going to personally patrol the violent streets of Chicago? He seems to think, because, going back to the convention, he just decreed that, quote, the crime and violence that today afflicts our nation will soon, and I mean very soon, come to an end. That as a dictator, an authoritarian, he can just will this into effect. And on Friday, he said, this American carnage stops right here and stops right now. Now, as a statement of intent, an aspiration, I don't have any problem with that. We need leaders who do, push us to things that appear unattainable. But the president isn't offering anything more than threats and a bully mentality. And Jesse Jackson called him out in a tweet, we need a plan, not a threat. We need jobs, not jails. In Washington, the Democrats are rolling over for Bush's cabinet picks. Nikki Haley, who has articulated a real ugly set of positions regarding her support for Israel, was confirmed as the UN ambassador on a vote of 96-4. Now, Nikki Haley, in her background, has a sex scandal. Just before she was elected governor of South Carolina, two men came forward. One was a fellow member of the legislature, and they frankly recounted sexual encounters that they had with Nikki Haley. And apparently her husband either doesn't know or, doesn't disapprove, because she's used, very carefully crafted language like, I've never been unfaithful. But we have these allegations out there from credible people who say, yeah, I stripped Nikki Haley. Now, maybe in the Trump administration, that is seen as a plus. But in the past, these kinds of sexual activities have disqualified candidates. So have the nanny don't pay their taxes problems that plague so many of Trump's wealthy appointees. But Wilbur Ross got approved by the Senate Commerce Committee without any objection. It was done on a voice vote. Ben Carson won unanimous approval from the Senate Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee to run HUD, and he doesn't know a damn thing about it. I mean, Elizabeth Warren, I believe, sits on that committee. And she rubber-stamped Ben Carson? And this is, when you look at the way the Republicans started their obstruction of Obama on day one, and they did confirm most of Obama's cabinet appointees. They dragged a few out, but most of them were ultimately confirmed. Not so with judgeships. But here the Democrats have made noises like, oh yeah, we're going to stop these bad cabinet appointees, and I don't think a single one of them will be denied confirmation. We might see one or two withdrawals. But you're not going to see even the Democrats unite and say, even though the Republicans have the majority and will prevail, we are going to make a statement that we will not, a single one of us, vote for this nominee, like, let's say, Rex Tillerson, let's say, Jeff Sessions. But the feckless Democrats will not do that. And that's why I'm very concerned that one of these three Neanderthals that Trump wants to appoint to the Supreme Court, they'll get grilled and there'll be a lot of posturing and, hand-wringing. The Democrats will ultimately approve. Bill McKibben has a great op-ed in today's New York Times. I've linked to it in the show file for this podcast. And he says that on pipelines like Keystone XL and Dakota Access, that Donald Trump is looking backward, at least to the 1950s. And McKibben says if the Keystone is ever completed, it'll employ about 35 full-time workers. Trump says it's 28,000. That includes the hookers, right, who get extra work on payday. The number of workers in our labor-intensive solar industry alone now surpasses those employed extracting coal, gas, and oil combined, says McKibben. So I encourage you to read this because I think that, as I referenced earlier, Obama was looking forward, not backward, to a fault. And Trump, he's looking backward and clearly to a fault. Governor Jerry Brown gave his State of the State message here in California yesterday and had strong words of defiance for Trump. Doesn't believe in alternate facts. And he, you know, puts out a very strong line on climate change. And I just wish Jerry Brown's actions here in California matched his word, because we're still fracking, we're still injecting wastewater. And the other issue on the environment, Jerry Brown wants to divert a whole lot of California, Northern California river water into a canal and feed it to Southern California. Jeremy Scahill has published a great interview at The Intercept today with veteran muckraker Seymour Hersh. And Hersh blasts the corporate media for its failures in the coverage of the claims, unproven, of Russian hacking that influenced our election. He blasted news organizations for lazily broadcasting the assertions of U.S. intelligence officials as established facts. And he said that the news organizations are crazy town for their uncritical promotion of the pronouncements of the Director of National Intelligence and the CIA. And let me find this quote here where he says, you know, they said 17 intelligence agencies have supported this. He said, what does an assessment mean? It's not a national intelligence estimate. If you had a real estimate, you would have five or six dissents. One time they said 17 agencies all agreed. Oh, really? The Coast Guard and the Air Force, they all agreed on it? And it was outrageous, and nobody did that story. An assessment is simply an opinion. If they had a fact, they'd give it to you. An assessment is just that. It's a belief, and they've done that many times. I hope you'll read the full account of the interview with Cy Hersh. And finally today, we're keeping an eye on these bills that are bubbling up across the country in state legislatures to criminalize protests. In Minnesota, lawmakers are advancing a bill that would allow cities to sue protesters who violate the law for the cost of the police response to the demonstration. This is amazing. The bill is being carried by Representative Nick Zerwas, and it relates to blocked freeways and other civil disobedience that he finds inconvenient. So he wants to criminalize it. And as you know, we have bills in Minnesota, Washington State, Michigan, and Iowa, North Dakota. And this is a creeping threat to our First Amendment right to assemble and to protest. And I hope that if you're in one of those states, you will be lobbying your members of the legislature or a friendly governor to defeat such attempts. Thanks for listening to my News and Comment podcast. Remember, Friday at 5 Eastern, 2 Pacific, we'll be doing a Facebook Live feed. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.